I really want to utilize this study. I thought about the various things that this study could be about, and I had no less than a choice of six things that I would like for the study to be about. But I was thinking about that, flipping a coin. But I thought that at the end of this study, I would like, knowing that after the last great day, each one of us will be going back to our individual congregations, that there's something I'd like for you to take back with you. I'd like for us to do a study tonight that can have some productive effect for us and for the church as a whole. And as a result, I chose the topic of evangelism. I thought that this would have been a very important subject. I've entitled it really, Evangelism is Not a Choice. It is mandatory. And I want for us to talk a little bit about this because there has been concern about the slow growth that has been taking place in the church. And not only that, but there are some congregations that are quite stagnant. They have not seen any growth over maybe a few years, as well as there are some that are declining in growth, and that is not a good thing. I know that we have different circumstances in different congregations in different areas, but I want to say to you that there is something that has been happening in Jamaica that I'd like to probably share a few of these things with you that I believe could be helpful for the Church of God on a whole. We have, for example, a congregation of the United Church of God in Jamaica, another one of the Living Church of God and others, and of course the Church of God International. And we were all at the same stage, say 12 years ago, round about maybe 25 members. And over that period of time of 12 years, by and large, the other two groups have remained the same. Their numbers are about 25, 30, thereabout. You look at the Church of God International in Jamaica, and you're looking at about 250, the growth that has taken place over that period. And I believe that there is some reason for this. And I'd like to probably venture to share some of what I think this is, and then, you know, we can get into this stuff. There's a lot to talk about, but we will try to see how we can compress everything to do it within reasonable time that we can get out of here. But one of the things I think we have done is we have been very insistent upon the distinctives of the Church of God. In other words, we try to use the things that makes us different from the other churches. And in our evangelistic program, we highlight these things. Now, this is not something that is unusual for just, say, a church. This is what we do in business. In business, we have a concept that we talk about product differentiation, the differences in the product. And it what gives you a marketing edge, what gives you the competitive edge, is when you can promote the differences. Some people use the differences and say the differences are things that, boy, it is difficult. You know, people are going to Sunday churches, to go to a Sabbath church, or to keep feast days. This is very difficult for them. But there's another way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that all these people out here don't have feast days. All these people out here, they don't have Sabbath. All these people out here, they don't understand that the kingdom of God is coming to the earth. All these people out here, they believe in an eternal, an immortal soul. We don't. And we look at these differences. And then we would advertise and publicize and ask a question, does man have an immortal soul? And we take on that, use the high points of difference. And that's what we would use in our newspaper, on a radio ad, or in some other means of publicity. And we would say, come and let's talk about this. And we invite people. In other words, we try to be provocative. Now that may not sound good, but I'm going to show you from a study here, that's exactly what Jesus did in, his evangelistic programs. That's exactly what Paul did in a number of the times when he met with people. They highlighted the point of differentiation. What differentiates us? Why? It does a number of things. One, when the members of our church understand how different we are from the churches of the world, it does something for us. It makes us understand. It gives us an identity. It makes us understand that we are people who are different. We are called out of the world. When we highlight our differences, it helps us to be able to talk with people and to share with them in a very deliberate way. Because what has happened? I'll tell you one of the things that is happening in the church. One of the things that's happening in the church is that many of us, and I just say us, not necessarily us here, but us in the church overall, in around the world, we do have relatives. Relatives who are members of a good Sunday church, and, a good aunt who is a great Baptist, and that aunt, has been going to church now for the last 35, 40 years. You know her to be a very good and a great and a wonderful person. You know she's someone who shows love. You know she's someone who, she tries to live an upright, moral, dignified life. She has raised her children well. And then you turn around and you say, but she, how could you say she's not a Christian? How could you say that my aunt is not a Christian? And therefore, in order not to become offensive, in order not to make her feel estranged, we begin and we start saying, we are all Christians. It doesn't matter whether you are going to the Sunday church or, once somebody's heart is right, once they are sincere, once they love God, then that is all right. And so you find that there is a kind of watering down, a kind of a compromise that begins to take place. And that line of demarcation, that difference between God's people and the people who are in the churches of the world, we begin to lose that, it becomes blur. And we begin to lose those specific things that make us different. These things, it means that we're just another group. The only thing is that we are a small group. We are another group, only that we don't have as lovely music as the guys over there. Because people are seeing the difference between us and them. Oh, you just go, you keep the Sabbath, but the Sabbath you don't have to keep it because really it's just a matter of a choice. We teach and we make it very clear that if you do not keep the Sabbath, you will not enter the kingdom of God. If you do not keep the holy days of God, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. We make those clear statements and we draw the line in the sand. And that's a premise on which we have evangelized. And people have come to hear us. There's another thing we do. We allow individuals to come in from other church groups to our Bible studies like tonight. And we will give the podium to the person from the Jehovah Witness Church or from the Yahweh, sacred name churches, or we give it to them from a Baptist church, the theologians, whoever. And we say, you come and you speak tonight and tell us why we are wrong. And you have the opportunity to win all of the souls you see before you here tonight. And don't hold back. Don't hold back. And we give them the opportunity to do that. And they come in and they speak, and we have an opportunity to speak. And of course, all this is done in love. It is done with civility. And the person is able to speak, and we are able to speak. We have won a lot of people to come to the church after those kinds of discussion. Of course, you can't take those chances if you're not prepared. Because you can go up there and this guy comes very bright and he's using a lot of Hebrew and Greek references and then you don't know how to answer him. So you just don't take those chances. But if you are prepared, you can do these things. And I'm telling you, it has worked for us. We are not just 200, when I say 250, that's in Kingston. In Ocho Rios, we have just about 20 down there. In Spanish Town, another area, there are about 40. You know, in Montego Bay, there are about 60 people in that congregation. But this is something that has been happening. In fact, one of the things that happened, when I tell you Spanish Town, that particular congregation down there, was never part of the church. They were not Sabbath keepers. They were not whole day keepers. But one day their minister came to our evangelistic meeting. And when he came, he began to say, we got to hear more of this. And later on, the entire church, we had a baptism, you might have read about it in one of the news here, where we baptized at one time, I don't remember the number, but it was something like 30 or 40 people. This is one church. A whole church of people. We stopped evangelizing souls and evangelizing churches. Winning them over. Yes. That's what we need. And we have to understand. But probably the most important thing that we have done is what I want to talk with you about tonight. And that is personal evangelism. I would like to share with you on this topic of personal evangelism, and here's how I want to proceed with the evening's presentation. I'll make some remarks on this topic of personal evangelism, and then we will examine an example of personal evangelism done by Jesus Christ. We're going to go to the scriptures and look at the situation in which Jesus himself did a period of evangelism when he met with the woman at Samaria, and to pull out some nuggets from that. And after that, I would like for us to look together at some specific things that each member of the Church of God can do in order to contribute to the growth of the church. It is during that time that questions and comments will be invited, that if you want to ask some questions or to make some comments, we can do that. So the first thing I want to do is just to make, some remarks on the issue of personal evangelism. You know, the American church statistics compiled in 1995 showed at that time that in terms of persons coming into churches, and this is just churches generally now, okay? But we're going to look at what works. In terms of the people you see in churches all across America, only 3% came in as a result of watching an evangelistic TV program, watching the television. 3% came in via that method. 14% came in as a result of a sermon preached at a church. That is, the sermon was preached, somebody came to the church, and they heard, and therefore 14% of the membership came in as a result of that. Another 14% was raised by family to be a Christian, meaning you are in the church, you've brought your son, your daughters, and they've grown up in the church. About 14% of the church was made up of that. And 24% came into the church through personal evangelism. A conversation with a family member, a conversation with a friend. In other words, the area that gives us the highest return in evangelism is not our large television programs, our newspaper ads. It is when the members of God's church get involved in evangelism. You know, I heard a story once about a building that got on fire. And this building happened to have been an ice factory, ironically. And after the fire was over and the building was burnt down, the people were wondering, how is it that an ice factory could be burnt down. This is a place where ice is and there was water. And the firefighters said in their report, you know, we had enough water that could out the fire, but the water was frozen. In the church, we have the resources for the growth and development of the church, but that resource has not been turned on. And that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about how we can activate the primary resource that God has given his church for the growth of the church. The Apostle Paul says in Philemon 6, he says, I pray that you may be active in sharing your faith so that you will have a full understanding of every good thing we have in Christ. I pray that you will be active in sharing your faith. The book of Philemon is just Philemon because there is just one chapter. And it's verse 6. We see there. Now, what I want to say to us is that, remember, each one of us, we were foreordained from before the foundation of the earth. Each one of us, God had foreordained our calling. Our calling might have been manifested. It might have been realized at some age, whatever age it was that you were called. But long before we were conceived in our mother's womb, each one of us, our calling was already foreordained. Now, let's think about that. Why did God do that? Did God know when I was out in the world, in politics, because I was a political representative for many years in my country? Did God know me at that time? Was there a connection between my calling and what I was doing then? When I was in school, and I was trying to make a decision as to what and a career, whatever career line I want to go in, did God know me then? Did he know he was going to call me? Was he doing anything at all in my life in preparation for the time when my calling would be fulfilled? I dare say yes for all of us. I dare say that the life experience of each one of us in the church from our childhood until the time you were called, all of that time was important towards your Christian life today. All of the experiences that you have accumulated, it is there for you. In other words, when the Apostle Paul was there watching them stone Stephen, when he was there and he was persecuting the church, do you believe that he was, of course you know that, he was foreordained. His calling was not yet manifested. But all of those things, and he himself has used it in his work in the church. That's why he could say, I'm the least of the apostles. That's why he can make certain remarks, because he understood all of these things. They are there and they are done in our lives to accumulate, to prepare us for the work that God calls us in the church. In other words, what am I saying to you? There is no one that God has called in the church that he has not given gifts to do work for the body of Christ. There is no one, every person that God has not called all the people of the world. He has only called a few people out of the world. And those few people are special. And each person that God has called out of the world, each one is endowed with gifts for the development, the growth of the body of Christ. Your life message has four parts to it. Personal evangelism is not about going out necessarily to be a theologian. It's not about going out there to be an expert in explaining, you know, the Sabbath and the feast days and all the doctrines of the church. Personal evangelism If you can do that, that's great. That's wonderful. And you must do it. But personal evangelism is more centered around our personal experiences with God. A person who is a personal evangelist, if you may call it that, a better word to use rather than evangelist, is a witness. You are a witness for God. That's what we are. We are witnesses for God. And God has given us what we need to be witnesses for Him. What are the things that we witness about? One, we have a testimony. Each one of us has a testimony. The story of how we began a relationship with Christ is a testimony. How did it happen? Can you think back? Where were you when it happened? How did you come to be in the church of God? Who spoke to you? What did they say? What is it that's caught your attention? How do you feel when this happened? How do you respond? Did it take you some time before you believed? Did you come and you listened to probably about 20 sermons before you took a decision? What were you experiencing during those sermons? What did you learn? What was the point when you made that change? Can you relate that experience? That's a testimony. You have a testimony. There's something that happened to you that you have to share, that God has given to you as a gift, that no one else has. No one else can tell your story. If you should never tell your story, you will die, and that story will die, and no one will hear it, and that's a gift that God gave to you that you never did use. Each one of us is walking around with a gift that God has given to us that we need to use and utilize more and more for the growth of God's church. Your life lessons. What are the most important lessons God has taught you? What have you learned? What have you learned when you've had your financial difficulties? What have you learned when you wanted to get married and you couldn't find anyone, or probably you still can't find anyone? What are you going through? How are you being faithful? What are some of the temptations that have come your way, but you have lived it through? Oh, wonderful! You've gone through some things. There are some experiences you've been through. You have a story. There is a story that is very unique, very personal. No one else has that story. You alone has the story. And somebody out there wants to hear your story. There's somebody at the place where you work who wants to hear your story. There's a member of the family, a cousin, who needs to hear your story. There is someone in the neighborhood who would like to hear your story. And you know what? The thing about telling stories is that people like to hear stories. People don't necessarily like to hear you come to say, I'd like to talk to you about the Sabbath. They don't necessarily want to hear you come and say, I'd like to talk to you to let you know that man doesn't have an immortal soul. That's not what they want to hear. They want to hear, you know, when I was 20, I went through, you gave a story today. A story you gave about 3 years old, your father, and how it went. And that story was very touching. Ask anyone here if that story was not probably what touched them most. It touched you. You cried. Well, did you all see? Maybe I shouldn't have said it. But I saw some tears. The stories are powerful. You know, I want to tell you this. As someone who was trained in the field of politics, in campaigns and so on, I used to train a number of the candidates who ran for elections. And one of the things that was most effective when we are training them is how to develop a story to tell. I saw, even in the elections going on here in the United States, and you'll see how well it goes down, when one of the politicians would turn and they begin to explain and to tell a story, of who they met, how they met, and they've learned it. I heard Hillary Clinton telling stories. I heard Obama telling stories. I heard McCain telling stories. I heard Huckabee telling stories. I heard them all telling stories during the primaries. And even now they're still telling stories. It's not something that works only in the church. It's something that works because people are people. People are people everywhere. But we have a story that they don't have. I love to tell the story of unseen things above, of Jesus and His glory, of Jesus and His love. That old, old story. We have a story to tell. The issues that God has helped you through, many of us, you are a praying person. How has God responded to your prayer? Or not responded? Even when I say not responded, understand that. God answers prayer and He always responds. But maybe the response is not something that you regard as a response. But the point I'm making is this, that in your prayer and in your fasting and all of what you're going through, aren't there situations you've been through? How has God helped you in the different aspects of your life? All of these things go together to form a story that each one of us has to tell. The Apostle Peter tells us that we were chosen by God in 1 Peter 2 and verse 9 to do His work and to speak out for Him, to tell others. In other words, He wants us to really, you know, speak out for God. We must always have an answer to give for the faith that is within us. So, witnessing is not about going out to know the doctrines and to be able to convince people that this church is right and so on. Because what you will find is that people who come to the church do not necessarily at first come to the church because of doctrine. It's not necessarily so. It does happen, but that's not necessarily so. If you look at the history of the church, you will see that the love, they knew that they were people of God because of their love. They knew because they shared. During in the Acts of the Apostles, you saw where they shared among one another. And people saw how they lived. And because of how they lived, people wanted to be a part of this group. When they came in, they understood this was the people of God. Yes, people of God, you have to keep the Sabbath. Yes, you have to keep your feast days. But that's not where it begins. So we are witnesses for God. And I wanted to highlight that. I want to highlight that why stories are so good. And people, an individual would prefer to hear your story than to necessarily hear me or to hear one of the ministers come to talk to them, to begin to talk to them about the Sabbath and talk to them about these things. It is because when you speak and you tell your story, you are like a satisfied customer speaking to them. When I speak to them, I sound like a salesman trying to sell them a product. People prefer to talk to a satisfied customer than to a salesman. So when we go and they hear a sermon sounds like you're convincing, you're selling the gospel. You sell it, quote unquote. When you tell your story, you are a satisfied customer, explaining what you've been through. Nobody can challenge your story because that's yours. They can challenge what I say when I'm preaching, but they can't challenge your story because your story, nobody can change that story because that's your story. And I want us to understand, therefore, that we are equipped, we have what is needed in order to be able to go out there in order to do evangelism. So what? How do we do it? Ask these four questions. One, What was my life like before God called me? That is one question. And write, this is how you get your story. In other words, what I'm doing now, how do I write my story? One, what was my life like before God called me? Sit down and begin to write about that. What my life was like. You won't write the story in 1 hour. It will be over time. You're driving and then another idea comes to your mind. Or you're there working, and or you're there washing, or you're there doing something, and it comes to your mind. Another question. How do I know that I was being called? What is the experience I went through? Write a story about that. Write what happened to you. All of the process that you went through for your calling. How did I come by making a decision? That's another chapter of the story. How you made your decision. What difference has Christ made in my life? My life today. What is so different about it than it was then? Talk about that. The difference in my life. How my life has changed. What is new? That is how we would come by writing that story. Each one of us, the Apostle Paul puts it this way in 2 Corinthians 3, verses 2 to 3. He says this of us, and I don't know if you've ever looked at it this way. He says, you are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read by all men. Each one of us is an epistle, is a book. A book that you can turn the leaves, the pages, and read a story. The people of the world ought to be able to look at the people of God, and they are reading a story by our life, by the way we live, by the way we look during the times of trouble, by the way we attend to our families and our children, by our faithfulness, the way we walk away from our jobs and come to a feast. It's a story, it's a page, people are reading this. That is why, you know, the boss could have said to her, did you talk to Ron? Well, Ron isn't going to do that. He's read the story. He's looked at you. He knows you're not going to do that. He said, you haven't spoken to Ron. And this lady who didn't read the story, she says, yes, I mean, this is a lot of money. You haven't read the story. Go read it. There's a book to read. You are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read by all men. Clearly, you are an epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. Not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of the heart. You are a book to be read, an epistle to be read, each one of us. But have we really written things that we would not like others to read? Is it a book we want to hide? Or is it something that we are willing for anyone to turn the pages to look through and to look at? Something to think about. I think it is good to ask ourselves these questions. Some other questions that can be asked is, what has God taught me from failure? Has your life been just a success? Well, what has happened? What has God taught you in your times of failure? That's something to write in your story. What has God taught me from a lack of money? That's something to write my story. What has God taught me from the pain or sorrow or depression that I've been through? What has God taught me through waiting? Just waiting. Waiting to find, you know, there are many young men, young ladies in the church who they would like to have children. They cannot break the laws of God to go out there and say, well, you know, let me go have a child and then come back. You're doing yourself no good to do that. We can't talk about that now. But you are waiting. What is God teaching you while you're waiting? What has God taught you through your illness? You are going through illnesses, and there's so much pain, and there's so much in terms of the bills, and there's so much in terms of the possibility of how long you may live, or, you know, all kinds of things. What has God taught you through disappointments? What have I learned from my family, my church, my relationships, my critics? What are your critics saying about you? There's so much that we can learn. And God has all these. Will you turn with me, please, to John 4, verse 5? Personal witnessing calls for a number of things. And we're going to go through this story, and I'm going to summarize it for you. John 4, and we're going to start in verse 5. This is about Jesus when he came into Samaria, and he met the woman at the well. It starts, and it says, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. Now, the first thing to notice here is that Jesus found himself in a place, Samaria, as you will see from the story, is a place where the Jews did not go to visit, because the Samaritans and the Jews did not get along well. And in fact, the Jews did not like the Samaritans. The Samaritans did not like the Jews. And so it was two communities far apart. Yet Jesus found himself there. One of the lessons that come out of this is that many of us have people, maybe working in my office, that I don't like that guy. You know, he's too much. You know, I want to get away from him. We have our Samarias in our lives. And therefore, we don't want to go to evangelize. We don't want to talk to those people who we don't like. The first lesson to learn from what Jesus has done here is to talk to, and this is what he calls us to do, to love your enemies if they are your enemies, to love everybody. And therefore, we must find ourselves not just talking to the people we like and the people we get along. We find talk to them too. But we must reach to the maturity, the spiritual maturity, where we are able to reach out and speak to anyone. So Jesus went in and he was speaking to this lady there. And so the lesson from this first, from verse 4 there up to 6 is 5 to 6. Is that we cannot allow our personal prejudices to get in the way of our personal witnessing for God. And so we have to conduct our lives in a way that we can reach out, you know, to just about anyone. Let's go to verse 7. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? It says here in the bracket, his disciples had gone into the town to buy food. We could make some comments about that, but we won't. But notice what Jesus did. The woman came and she wanted water. Jesus knew that he wanted to evangelize this woman. He knew that he wanted to win her over for the kingdom of God. But he didn't start by saying to the Samaritan woman, you know, you Samaritans over here, I notice you're not coming to the temple. Over there, I mean, you know, you can't cause your personal feelings to cause you not to come to God's temple, you know, or say to her, why don't you Samaritans over here, you know, why aren't you keeping God's feast days? What's going on over here? You know, he didn't go with that. He started. She wanted water. He tried to identify with her. You want water? I want water too. The idea of developing a commonality with people. Many times when we are evangelizing individuals, if they feel that there is a separateness, if they feel that you're talking down to them, if they feel that you think that you know more than them, if they feel that you think that you are someone who is you know, there's this big difference, you're gonna lose them. You're gonna find that they want you to feel, they want to feel comfortable. And so what Jesus did was to establish a common ground with her. So that's the next thing in his evangelism. He placed also himself in a position of being dependent upon her. In other words, think of the psychology of it. If I go to someone and I say, listen, I need your help. It turns the coin, it turns everything around. The person begins to feel that I put the person in a place of power. The person is now in a place of power because I am the one who need your help. That's what Jesus did. He gave her power. Too often when we evangelize, we say, oh, you people, you don't keep this or you don't do this. You know, God's church, and we are supposed to be giving power. We empower people in order to win them for God. And that is what he was doing here. He said, could I have some water? So she could identify with him. And notice what he did. He started not with a statement, but with a question. Why? You'll notice that there are a lot of questions that will occur between himself and her together. Because statements are like blank walls. Questions open the mind. Questions invite responses. Questions are more social. Questions causes a conversation to begin. And so when you ask a question, you are engaging the person. So Jesus asked a question. And you know that he wanted to introduce her to rivers of living water. That's what he wanted to do. But he didn't start there. He didn't say, what are you doing at that well with water? Look, I have better water than that. He didn't start there. He said, I need some of your water. Why? Because I want you to desire mine. He started there. Let's move on. We go to verse 9. The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? Ah, see? There was a problem. And Jesus knew it. And she now is raising the problem. But here it is. He asked her a simple question for some water. And she could have given him the water. But now she is about to shift the whole discussion. And he could go and say, okay, so I'm a Jew, so you don't give Jews water? Okay, I go get my water myself. It could be an argument. Jesus understood the diversion. Very often when we engage individuals in discussions, they are not disciplined enough to stick to the point. They are not disciplined enough to just follow in the discussion. They divert, and they go here, and they go all over the place. What do we do? Look at what Jesus did. Because, you see, when she raised a very good concern, and that concern could have diverted the discussion. But look at what Jesus did. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is that asked you for a drink, he comes back to the water. He comes back to the point. In other words, he did not go now and start talking about how the Jews, how they get along and the Samaritans don't get along and go back into the history and they're going into a completely different thing. No. He brought the conversation right back. Talk about the drink. Talk about the water. Because he knew what he was about. He was about offering her rivers of living water. And so he maintained the course. He did not divert. He didn't find himself going off. Jesus refocused her attention on the thing he desired to speak about, water. And he did it by doing something very special. If you look in this statement, he said something that caused her to respond. And this is a particular technique, and I would like for you to go this over in your own time and look back at it. Jesus used a particular technique that caused her to stop talking about Jews and stop talking about Samaritans and get back to his topic. What do you think he did? He raised her curiosity and said something very puzzling, controversial, when he raised the question about giving her living water. If you knew who it is that is offering you, asking you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would give you living water. What's that? What Jesus did was to throw his thing into the conversation. And right away, what did that do? It caught her attention. He found something to divert her attention from the things that she wanted to talk about to come back to the things that he wanted to talk about. And he said something controversial that from here on, you're going to see that the discussion is quite different. Because the first thing she's going to say, living water. And then she asked, this lady, I think she's fantastic. Because I think she's a very deep thinker. Because when Jesus raised a question, she didn't just take it like that. She posed some more questions to him. In other words, Jesus is posing questions. She's posing questions. And they're trading their questions. But Jesus knows where he's going. And he is directing her to rivers of living water. Sir, the woman said in verse 11, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. In other words, she was puzzled. You're going to offer me living water? Who is this man? What is he talking about? I don't understand him. Many times when we are evangelizing, this is what I meant when I said to you, we emphasize the differences in our evangelism. We talk to the people about the things they don't know about. We talk to them about the things that they will be curious about. We talk to them and tell them some very strange things, sometimes very, very deliberately. Man will become God. What? This is blasphemous. Where do you get that from? You hear what this guy just said? Man will become God? It's only Satan would make a statement like that. Oh yeah. It's controversial. But you get attention. And then you manage your discussion in a way where you say, well, okay, now that you've got the attention, you say to the person, well, you don't believe it. What do you believe anyhow? I want to hear what you believe. But you get the person talking. Because when you allow people to say what they believe, you don't believe that man will become God? Nope. Why? The Bible doesn't say so. Okay, so what do you think is the destiny of man? And you just use the Socratic approach, where you just keep asking questions and allow the person to talk. And usually if you ask the right questions, you talk them right into a corner. And when in the corner they need some help to get out. And you're the only one that has the answer. You're the key to open that corner so they can get out. It's a strategy. So Jesus has raised this thing and puzzled her. And she's now, what is this man? She says, where can you get this living water? You know, are you greater than our father Jacob? Who gave you all? Are you greater than our father Jacob who gave us this well and drank from it himself? As in also his flocks and herds? What do you think is happening here? Jesus stirred her with this puzzling question that caused her now to be asking him questions so that he can give her the right answers. What are the questions he's asking her? She's asking him? Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He has all the answers for those questions. But she would never have asked those questions if he did not raise something puzzling for her to think about. In other words, in our evangelism, we cannot be just tame. Market differentiation gives you the competitive edge. Market differentiation helps people to say, well, look at us over here. That is what Hertz does. Avis is number one. Hertz knows they are not number one. Hertz needs to have a business. So you know what Hertz did? They said, we are number two. And that it works. One would say, because you're not number one, no, we're number two. We're over here. And we're better. We're number two. We don't want to be number one. Because when you're number one, you don't get personalized service. But number two, we know you. We know you by name. Market differentiation. God has given us that difference in the gospel. That's why Paul said, if any man comes and preach another gospel, let him be accursed. We have the gospel. What did this woman do? First of all, Jesus got her back on track. Because she started asking the right questions. She wants to know more. That's what is happening here. She challenges him with some very deep questions, asking him for some answers. What is it that happens here? This is the single greatest opportunity. When you have someone and you're evangelizing and they begin asking you questions, there is your opportunity. That is your opportunity. On many occasions, if you don't have the answer for the questions, just be honest and say, you know what? I'm glad you asked. I know someone who could answer your question. Or, you know, I'm glad you asked. I'm going to go do some studies and we get back. Could I call you tomorrow? But the point is, if you don't even have an answer, get them to the point where you know what it is that they want to know. Verse 13, as we go down. Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." Once she asked the question, Jesus was direct with his answer. He did not go around the bush. He did not try to give any, he was very direct. No long story. He satisfied the question by giving a direct answer. Very often we talk ourselves out of, so to speak, out of the sale. I've had a life of experience, so I used to train people in the field of sales too.
your mic is on top.
Oh, the mic is on top. Yes, thank you. Yes, sir. And we used to say to some of the folks, you just talk yourself out of the sale. You can talk a little bit too much sometimes. Maybe like what I'm doing here now. You can talk a little bit too much and talk yourself out of, if you don't come direct. You can create controversy if you don't give the correct answer. And so it is usually good that if you can give the answer there and then, you'll be very direct. And say, would you like to think about that answer I gave to you? And let us talk some more about this tomorrow. But just give sufficient and leave it there. Never seem too hasty. Never seem too overpowering. Never seem too dogmatic. Jesus gave her an answer. Verse 15. The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water that I won't get thirsty." Because it sounds good. Give me this water that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming to draw more. Now, she has put him on the spot. Because that's not a water you can just go and draw up like that from the well. She now has to understand the spiritual, have a spiritual understanding of this water. But what she wants is for Jesus to deliver now. His credibility is now on the line. Because he's been telling her he can give her this water. And now he's going to have to go into a big story to tell her what this water is. And say, "Oh, I thought it was water." He's going to have to go through explaining to her. So this is now a test of his credibility, whether he's genuine, because she says, "Okay, now you've told me, give me this water." Let me tell you something. Many times when we evangelize, what happens after the person has come to accept what we say is very important. Very, very important. Our personal credibility, our character, the person we are, whether we can be trusted, is very important to that person. The message is as important as the messenger in this case. Because the message will not be bought if the messenger doesn't seem credible. Shouldn't be like that. But when you're just meeting someone, talk to them, they look at you. And they try to say, should I believe this guy? Jesus had to cause her to be able to believe him, that what he said is true. He could not go now and take up some water and give to her and say, here's the living water. Because this is all spiritual. So what do you think he did? Let us look at what he did. He changes subjects now. And you wonder, what is going on here? He said to her, go call your husband and come back. Did Jesus know that she didn't have a husband? Yes. He knew she did not have a husband. But what he wanted to do is to show her that you can believe me. I can be trusted. What I said to you, it is true. So in order to do that, he said, go call your husband. He knows she doesn't have a husband. And she said to him, I have no husband. She replied, Jesus said to her, you are right. He knew it. You're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is true. In other words, what Jesus did was to use another scenario to validate his message. He went to use something that is unrelated to the water. But his message needed to be validated. He needed to convince her that you can believe me. What I'm saying is true. Or credibility in evangelism is important. That's what we are saying here. Many times, and just what we said earlier about reading our life as an epistle is very, very important. And that is something that each one of us has to look at as we go out to do evangelism. So the purpose of this statement is to cause her to understand that he can be believed. And that is when verse 19 she says, "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet." Verily, now she's coming to him, the person himself. "I can see I can believe you. Or I can see you are somebody I can listen to." Because he was able to prove that he's someone that can be trusted. This is showing to us how Jesus. Now, four things Jesus did in here. And let me just show you the four things very quickly. One, he built a relationship. 4 R's, by the way. Very easy to remember. Relationship. That's one. Two, relevance. Relevance. He made the message relevant to her needs. In other words, what he said to her was something that he put the gospel in the context of the woman's needs. She needed water, and therefore he put the gospel in the context of her need. You know what this means? It means that in evangelism, we need to look for people when they are in a point. For example, who do you know that is right now just had, there's a death in the family? Your evangelism does not have to come from the doctrine. It comes from the compassion. It comes from the love. It comes from the comfort. You meet them at their point of need. Who do you know that just had a newborn baby? Who do you know that just got a new job or was just laid off from their job? People have different situations, and you can meet people in their particular situations, and you're able to help them. So it's relationship, relevance. The next one is response. You must have a response. You must always be prepared to give an answer for the faith that is within you. So the third one is response. And the fourth one is respect, meaning the person regards you as someone that they can listen to. These are four basic things that are brought out of what Jesus did in his program of evangelism. In other words, if you want to do personal witnessing, always remember that you're building the relationship. A relationship. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. People do not care how much you know until they know how much you care. If you can cause the individuals you talk to understand that you care, then they will want to listen to you. And therefore, that's the point at which I close. And we will get into our questions and talk about maybe some specific things that we can do, each of us can do. I have some ideas here, as to just what are some things that I can do in order to, to become effective. In other words, what I've just outlined to you are more or less the theoretical aspect. But what are some practical hands-on things that you can do in order to, because I would like to throw out a challenge, and that challenge is this. I would like that at this Feast of Tabernacles, we make a commitment, each one of us, to, during the course of this year, to evangelize at least 3 to 5 persons. 3 to 5 persons. And in doing so, it doesn't mean the person will necessarily eventually come into the church, because God does the calling. But we are to do the evangelism. Okay? And if you do that and make it a commitment, I'd like to share with you what you can do, some things you can do in order to get that done. Make a list of 3 to 5 persons you know that you say, I want to evangelize these people for 2008 into 2009. Get some index cards and write each person's name on one of the index cards. You're going to write down on the card relationship, leave about maybe 2 or 3 lines, and you're going to talk about response and respect. So those are your 4 guidelines. And for relationship, you're going to say, what is it that I'm going to do to develop a relationship with this person? Write down some things that you can do. For example, you could send out some birthday cards. You could give a call. You could do a babysitting day for the person. Develop a relationship with the person. Be a good example to the person. Try and know the person. Understand what the person is experiencing in his or her life. Understand what they're going through. Mary has 4 children. Oh, they're 5 to 12 years old. You know, so she has issues in sending children to school and training some of the children. One of her child, I understand, is autistic. You know, you understand these things. And so you get to know more and more about Mary. Okay? And you write these things down. And you try to say, how can I relate to Mary in her particular circumstance? Okay? That's relationship. Don't feel that you must immediately begin talking to the person about anything to do spiritually. No. You are only building a relationship. That's what you're doing. It's somebody you already know, but you are now strengthening that relationship. But just as how Jesus knew that he wanted to talk to the woman about rivers of living water, but he didn't start there. He built the relationship first. That's what we're doing. We're building the relationship first. And you can plan 2 or 3 events together with that person. You know, that you can probably visit together, probably have them over to dinner. You know, anything that is good, right? Then you build the respect. You can begin to build the respect. You don't have to wait until the end, where the person understands that you're someone who can be trusted, someone that can be listened to because of the way you live, because of the way you speak. You're not a person who gossip. You're not a person who go over, and you're not an idle chatter. You are very purposeful. You are a very constructive person. And you know what? By the way, I must tell you this secret. I know you know it, but let's still keep it a secret. The more we evangelize, the stronger we become spiritually. The more we evangelize, in other words, if even you do not win a single soul, you would have won yours. Because you will keep strong. Because what it does, it requires you to live up to a particular standard. Because you have to be an example to the people that you are evangelizing. So you are accountable, and you have to live up to a particular standard. So you are able to do that. And then you can give the person, after a while, some church literature to read. Give them the literature. You don't have to say anything, and the literature you could give them. So you can give them some literature to read, and then to say that at some point we can meet. You know, I just want to close at this point. I really want to thank you. You know, there's so much we could be going on and talking more and more about. But suffice it to say that the idea of the individual member of the church understanding that part of our Christian duty is to be a witness for Jesus Christ is a vital thing for us to recognize. And irrespective of where we are, irrespective of our circumstances, God has given us the gifts that we need in order to make an impact upon someone else. Remember, your story, nobody else has it. And your story is a story God has given to you, and you ought to use your story for the glory of God. May I ask you, therefore, and really encourage you to make this year a strong evangelistic year in your congregation. If nobody else does it, make sure you do it. Make sure that when you get back to your congregation, you get those names written down and you begin doing some work and you work at it. And if nothing happens, that's okay. But make sure you have done your utmost. And ultimately, if nobody even responds, your life will have been preserved for the kingdom of God. Because through your life, you have been witnessing to others for Jesus Christ. May the good Lord bless and keep you. I leave tomorrow with my wife, Lola, and we go off to two other feast sites. She goes to join our children in Baltimore at a feast site in Pennsylvania, is it, Lola? Yes. And I go back to Jamaica, to Otarius. I have two more sermons to give. before the last great day and on Sunday. So there's a lot of work ahead. But I thank you so much. It was more than a blessing to be here. And I continue to pray with you as my brothers and sisters that we all will remain faithful. Because wherever you are in the world, we know that your brothers and sisters, we are all going through this time that is very challenging for all of us. But if we remain faithful to the end, God will indeed bless us.